Hello, welcome to the Snooker Scene Podcast. I'm Dave Hendon. This week I have a chat with Martin O'Donnell, a professional from London. He's currently 84 in the world rankings, recently a semi-finalist in the shootout, and I had a good chat with Martin about his background, his current career, and his hopes for the future. So Martin, how did you get into snooker? How did you discover the sport?
Well, my mum and dad always watched it from when I was a young kid, so my mum's massive snooker fan. And then I basically started playing pool first down my local sort of working men's club that my dad took me to. So I've got three older sisters and an older brother, and yeah, we were taken there from a young age, but there was a pool table there and you used to have to be 8 years of age, and when I was younger I was dying to get on it.
Right.
Yeah, had to just be patient. Got a little table for Christmas 1 year. Started playing, but I was much more into my football when I was younger. I played for a pro club, Wigan Wanderers, for a few, 2 or 3 years, and then yeah, when that sort of went the wrong way, I took the snooker up a bit more and just fell in love with it.
And in what way did it go the wrong way at Wigan?
Well, they let me go.
Okay, yeah, but it's okay. So it wasn't a choice, because you hear some players, they like make a choice between sports.
No, it wasn't a choice, yeah. No, they let me go. Yeah. I was quite shy when I was young. I didn't really have a lot of social confidence, and yeah, I just didn't, it kind of knocked me back a lot, to be fair. And then, yeah, I suppose playing all the way through the winter months became less appealing as well. And knocking a few balls around in a warm snooker room became a bit more appealing, and the fact I was a little bit good at it, you know, just went from there really.
Were you good right from the start? Because some players do have a sort of natural eye, don't they?
Yeah, I've always had great hand-eye coordination, so I was one of those sort of all-rounders, good at sports at school, but I was a late start with snooker, so I didn't play my first junior comp until I was 15, I think. And I did okay. I beat a couple of the lads who were apparently in the top 8 or 10 in my first tournament. That was at Willie Thorne's in Leicester. And yeah, that gave me the bug for it, really. That gave me the bug for it. So I was a bit of a late starter. But yeah, I knuckled down and sort of progressed quite a lot between 15 and 18.
Big difference, though, between pool and snooker, isn't it? Everyone sort of says they're the same, but it's not at all.
Oh, it's totally different games. Totally different games. You know, just the balls are different, the white ball's smaller in pool, there's no space on the table. I did a pool exhibition for a charity event a few weeks back, and I went and did a little bit of practice for it because I thought I'd just do a little bit of practice. Oh, it's just a totally different game. It might be easy to pot on that, but the, you know, with the table being so small and a lot of balls, it's congested, so yeah, they're totally different games really.
So how did you sort of progress? You know, you talk about the junior scene. You said you were 15 when you played in your first one. Was that then the start of a run of them? Did you sort of keep on going in the juniors?
Yeah, I did. I didn't go to all of them. I didn't find out about many. But I started to find out about the EASB junior comps. So I started playing in them when I was 16, really. My mum and dad were never really that wealthy, so practice time was a bit limited, and going away to tournaments was a bit limited as well. But they helped me absolutely as much as they could. And I got a part-time job and started funding myself a little bit. My dad used to drive me absolutely everywhere. So yeah, I definitely wouldn't be playing snooker if it weren't for them.
And how rapidly did you sort of improve? Did you feel yourself improving?
Yeah, I did. When I was 15, so Martin Gould joined our club at that stage, where I was playing in North Harrow, and yeah, I started to practice with him a fair bit, and he was bringing me along quite a lot, and he got me to go into the junior comps really. He said, go and have a try and see what it is. And yeah, when I went there, there was a handful of players that were probably clearly better than me, but I thought, past that, actually, I'm not that far behind these guys. So I had a massive conversation with my mum and dad when I was 16. They wanted me to go to college and stuff, and I did, but I only stuck it out for about 5 weeks. Right. And I begged them. I said, look, please, can I just go and do snooker? I managed to sort out some free practice in the club. Mm-hmm. You know, I said, look, I'll get a part-time job, I'll pay for my tournaments, you know, I'd really love a crack at this. And if it doesn't work out, you can always study a bit later on in life. Mm. And luckily they were supportive, and hopefully now it's starting to pay off.
It's interesting, because it's usually mothers who worry about, and was your mum sort of, well, no, I'm not sure about this snooker sort of thing.
Yeah, well, my dad was as well. He wanted me to do my education. Mm. They both did. You know, they said, look, do your college, get your A-levels, and then at 18 you can do. And to be honest, that was probably sound advice. Mm. I probably should have done that. But at the same time, I had 2 years where I played Martin Gould for every day when I was 16. And he used to absolutely hammer me every day in practice. You know, he'd beat me 25-1, 25-2, things like that. You know, and I remember the first day I got like 5 frames off him, I went home skipping. You know, I still lost like 19-5 or something.
Yeah.
But that was a massive apprenticeship for me. And it's, you know, it taught me a lot how to play. And it helped me a lot, because I went to my junior comps and all of a sudden I was getting 5 chances of frame that I weren't getting against Martin, and then I started to do well.
So
I won my first junior comp just before my 17th birthday, which was the East Anglian under 17s, and I beat Jimmy Robertson in the final, funnily enough, which we still laugh about to this day, because he had lost in it in the final, that was his third year running. And obviously he was too old to play in it the following year. So it really helped me to progress.
Yeah, I think we first became aware of you when you got to the final of the English Amateur Championship, lost to Mark Joyce.
That's right.
But that's like a big deal, because that's like snooker's oldest tournament, and loads of great players have been in finals and won it.
Yeah, massively. And Martin Gould had won it a couple of years previous to that. You know, and I've always kind of played in his shadow from the clubs and stuff like that, so I wanted to go out there and start making a name for myself. So the English Amateur Final was great to take part in that, and I was devastated to lose that, because I felt like, at the time, I felt like I was being a bit more adventurous in the game. But when I look back at it, Mark Joyce, he did a proper match play job on me. And he beat me 8-3. But then that opened the door to a lot of other things, because we played the final at the World Automobile Club in Pall Mall. And a year later, they offered me a job there as their resident pro. And I worked there for 5 years whilst still playing snooker. So they gave me time off my tournaments. I was earning a nice wage there. You know, and that opened up a lot of doors for me.
Yeah.
And eventually, when I turned pro, I had to move on from there, because there's, you know, Barrington come in, there's 20 tournaments.
Yeah.
That's a little bit too much to.
Yeah.
They couldn't give me that much time off, and you can't expect it. So.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, the RAC club, because I've been there, and it's not a snooker club. It's not, you don't just roll in your jeans. You've got to dress in your suit, and even if you dress in your suit, you still see them looking at you, thinking, you know, you're not smart enough for us. It's a proper place, isn't it?
It is a proper place. It's a very prestigious club. Like you say, you know, if you haven't got your tie on and your top button done up, you know, they're very old school in there. And
but how was that for you? Because you've come through sort of snooker club culture, where it's not that at all. It's the opposite.
Yeah, exactly. But it was nice, actually, because, you know, I was going to work in a suit, so I was practicing in a shirt and trousers every day. So that gets you used to it a little bit. And it's a bit more professional. So I think that's helped me become a bit more professional in what I was doing, rather than just knocking a few balls around your local scruffy club. You know, actually, I was working, it was a job, I was there, and that really stood me in good stead, to be honest.
And what were your sort of duties? Were you coaching the
Yeah, so there was two of us, so there was me and Katie Henry.
Yeah.
So she was there, and yeah, so we would coach the members, basically just look after the room, because it's a members club. If people brought guests in, you know, you charge them a guest fee. We looked after the tables and maintained them, and we organised competitions for the members. But yeah, generally we just looked after the room, made sure everyone was behaving.
And were they all behaving? Because quite some characters there, I'm guessing.
No, it's very difficult. It's very difficult, especially Christmas time there, because the committee, the snooker committee there, that, you know, it's looked at as a serious room, and it's a beautiful, beautiful billiard room that they've got there. And, you know, they cherish it, and rightly so, and they want everyone to behave in the right way there.
Yeah.
Problem is, you have Christmas parties in December, and then people are coming down from dinner, you know, and they've all had a few bottles of wine, and they want to be a bit boisterous. Yeah, it wasn't easy in there at times, especially as a young guy at the time. I was only 21 when I started there.
Yeah.
You know, and you're having to tell 40 or 50 year old guys who have had a few drinks and diplomatically tell them that they've had one too many to be playing snooker. And you know, some guys are great and they took that on board, and others would go, who are you to be telling me that? So, yeah, it wasn't easy in there at times, but that was a very small percentage of the time.
Yeah.
You know, I've got a lot of fond memories from the RAC club.
But as you say, eventually you look into turn professional. As I remember it, you won the Snooker Backer Classic, you won that, and you got your fee paid for Q School.
That's right.
Yeah. So that was obviously a massive bonus.
Yeah, that was a massive bonus, for sure. One of my sponsors, Kevin Starr, who comes with me to all my tournaments, I had won his tournament about 2 months before the Snooker Backer Classic. So I went there, that was an invitational event, and I was looking for money there, so I won his tournament, and then I played in the Snooker Backer Classic, and that paid for my entry for Q School. And I think he paid 4 PTC events as well,
right,
for the entry. So, you know, it was a big boost to win those comps, because then you know you're in good form. And I went to Q School and I got on at the first event, and it really, you know, there's nothing like winning. You know, winning breeds confidence. So when you get in the habit of winning, you know, you've got a 7-10 point head start on the rest of the field.
Yeah, but Q School, I mean, it's a big pressure thing, isn't it? Because it's that one shot a year. I know there's obviously 2 or 3 events, but it's that couple of week period where you're either going to be a pro or you're not. But as you say, you've got through your first event.
Yeah, it's cutthroat. I mean, I'd played in the Q School previously, and I lost in the last round to Kurt Mafflin, where he didn't miss more, lost 4-1, and that was that. But, you know, it is cutthroat, Q School, and I think where you could be unlucky with it is if you fell in.
Yes.
Around that time. So it's 2 weeks of the year.
Yeah.
You know, if you come down with the flu or something like that, okay, Mr. Hearn is going to say, tough luck, that's how it
shouldn't
goes.
Be ill. Shouldn't be ill.
Yeah. Shouldn't be ill. Look after yourself. You know, but these things can't be controlled. But, you know, it's a great opportunity. It's a great opportunity. It's hard, but at the same time, it's probably easier. You know, this new tour that they're doing, you're going to have 10 tournaments and stuff, and you've got to try and finish in the top two. That's way harder. How many more matches have you got to win to finish in the top two in that than actually go to Q School and win 5 matches in a row? So I think a lot of people go there with the wrong attitude, to be honest, because it is such a pressure thing. But you've got to, but it's new to us. So I think to adopt the mentality you need for Q School is probably taking people a few years. And since I've dropped off the tour, you know, that's what I found. When you go back to Q School, you see all these amateurs who haven't really played in a lot of stuff throughout the whole year, or they've gone to PTCs, they're not earning any money. You can see the pressure on them that this is my 2 weeks. So I've always said a guy who's fallen off the tour who goes to Q School has got a massive advantage over the amateurs, and that might not be the case anymore with the new challenge tour that they're doing.
Yeah,
at least the amateurs should have a bit of confidence, maybe a little bit of money behind them, and they'd have been playing all year.
So how did you feel? So you got through the event, you're a professional now, you're like, that's only the start, isn't it? That's not the end of it. You've now got you're thrown into the pro ranks against like the top stars of the game.
Yeah, it's really strange because you worked so long to turn pro, and you know, the drive home was amazing because you think, I've been working so hard for this for so long, I've done it. But when you go home, sleep on it, the next day, wow, you've got to reassess all your targets, and you've got to start fresh again. and knuckled down, because the pro game is a totally different game. So I've always strived to improve myself in all aspects of my game. Since I've turned pro, I've realised you need to look after yourself off the table. You know, everything you do, your little routines at tournaments, it's massive. You've got to treat every tournament the same. I see a lot of players on tour prioritising different events because they're worth a bit more money and stuff like that. I don't really think that's healthy. You never know when you're going to have a good run in a tournament. You know, there's a lot of money out there in all tournaments, really. So I don't think you should be looking at first round checks and what they're paying and prioritising your tournaments like that. I think you should just go out there and try and do well in every tournament you play.
And that first year you're on, you're learning on the job, aren't you? You're learning, like you say, from experience of like, you know, how to approach certain matches or just how to be a professional, because you're not really told, are you? You just sort of turn up with your cue and that's you.
That's it. You're not told. You just learn. You learn as tournaments go by. The first year I got on, so we were still on the old format at that stage. So, you know, you had four or five qualifying rounds to try and get to the last 32. And I would never want to go back to that. I know a lot of players are now saying go back to that, but I wouldn't want to, because, you know, I won quite a few matches that year where it didn't pay. Sometimes the money didn't come in until round three and stuff like that, whereas at least now, okay, you might be playing a slightly harder match, but at least if you win, you're on some cash. But yeah, it's hard. You've got to learn quickly. You get punished, where you weren't getting punished before in the amateur ranks. And you could play well and lose, you know. And in the amateur ranks, that wouldn't happen too often. But it can happen a lot on tour. You know, it's tough out there. You can play well and still get beat. And that's hard to deal with sometimes.
And also, what's hard to deal with is the financial side. Obviously, when you're starting out, there's a lot of outlay. They've done away with the entry fees now, but in those days, you had to pay entry fees. There's travel expenses, all of that. Did you sort of appreciate how much that would cost when you started?
Yeah, I always had an idea of it because of, you know, I knew Martin Gould and actually I went and played Alfie Burden for a few years when I moved to his club when I was 18. So they always tell you, you know, what it costs each year. So I knew what was involved. I knew I had to look for some sponsorship. I'd saved up a bit of money from the RAC when I was working there. So I did know it was going to be expensive, but I knew if I knuckled down and played what I was capable of, you know, I was backing myself to win money and survive anyway.
Because it's not like a regular job, like you say, the RAC club. I guess at the end of the month you get a check. You get paid into your bank account. But although you're a professional snooker player, you're not actually guaranteed anything, because you've got to win at least a match in every tournament to get any money.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's what keeps the job exciting, and you know, that's what keeps you in the club. You know, there's a lot of downs in snooker, especially. There's downs in every sport, but I think unless you're a serial winner like three or four of the top boys, there's probably a lot more downs than there is ups in snooker. But, you know, we're not on any guaranteed money, so you've got to realise that when you go home. You know, don't sulk for two or three days when you go home. Get yourself back on the practice table, work out where you've gone wrong, you know, and try and put it right the next time you go out there. And I've always believed you've always got to do that, and you've always got to assess your game. I've always been honest with myself. You know, sometimes it's hard to look yourself in the mirror and go, actually, am I doing everything I should be doing or I need to be doing to make myself a successful snooker player? So I've always worked hard on that sort of stuff, and, you know, thankfully it's starting to turn for me now.
And that's the other thing you say about attitude. It's important, you know, you turn pro, if you then slip back and have to go back to Q school, you have to have a good attitude about that and not sort of, you know, be down in the dumps about it, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've been working with Ian McCulloch now for 18 months, 2 years. And he said it to me last year when I dropped off, and he said, listen, he said, if you drop off the tour, it might not be the worst thing in the world. He said, you imagine you go to Q school, right? and you get through, you'll have played 8-10 matches. Mm. It's a week before the qualifiers. He said, you're going to be sharper than any pro out there. Mm. So he put a very positive spin on something that can create a lot of anxiety, actually. Mm. You know, this time last year, that's all you're worried about. Am I going to stay on? Am I going to drop off? But he's done a lot of work with me, and he's drummed it into me, and it's coming out in me now. It's in a more natural way. It, you know, if you go to Q School, you've got to use it as a positive.
Mm.
You know, you've got to go there and you know, enjoy the challenge of getting back on. Mm. You know, that's what I did last year, and thankfully it turned right for me.
Mm. And do you enjoy being a snooker player? Because obviously you're doing what you love, you're playing snooker, but to get to that, there's a lot of travelling, a lot of time away from home, flying around the world and so on. Do you like that aspect of it, or just do you just accept that's part of the job?
A bit of both. I love travelling, so I've always loved going to different cities and playing snooker. Listen, there's no better job in the world. Me, I practiced with Anthony Hamilton quite a bit, and he came to me on Friday, and before we started, we said to each other, it's not a bad job, is it, really? There's far worse things to be doing out there. And there's not many people in the world that are lucky enough to do something that they love.
Mm.
So yeah, it's a great job. I love it. Going away and traveling is becoming a bit harder now. As me and my Mrs. Anna, we've just had a little boy. Mm. 13 weeks ago, so that's become a bit harder now.
Mm.
When you're saying goodbye at home and you're going to be away for a few days or a week or something, that's a bit harder now. But that gives me a lot of inspiration to come away and do well and make the absence from being at home worthwhile.
Mm. Well, Watford isn't too far away from where you live, but you did really well there recently in the shootout. I mean, that's kind of a nerve-shredding event anyway, but you just talk us through that. A great few days, very exciting, I'm guessing, very nervy sort of few days.
It is nervy. The shootout is so unique. It brings nerves like you've never experienced in another match on tour. And it's only the shot clock. That's all it is. It's, you know, if it was a one-frame shootout with no time constraints, you wouldn't get that nervous. But, you know, having to... the pressure of thinking on the spot, you have to think on the spot and think quickly and be decisive. That was a great few days. I never really got carried away at any moment, to be honest, because you just realise you could get bombed out of that tournament at any stage without it being your fault. You know, you could have a fluke. You know, in my quarterfinal, I had a big fluke against Akani, got on the black and made 40-odd, and then, you know, he doesn't do anything wrong, and I understood that could happen to you at any time. Mm. So I was just enjoying it game by game. I took it 10 minutes by 10 minutes at a time. Really enjoyed it. The crowd were very supportive.
Mm.
It was nice to do well in front of me, family and friends who come to support me.
But also the great thing about that event, I mean, I know a lot of snooker fans are not on board necessarily with the format, but it's not like we're at the Welsh Open this week. It's not 8 tables and you're out on table 6. Everyone gets their chance, don't they, in the limelight. And it's up to you then to try and make it work, as you did, and of course as Michael did by winning it.
Well, exactly that. You know, in all the other tournaments in the year, you don't play a TV match unless you're playing one of the top 8 or the top 16. You know, and then it's very hard to win against those guys. You know, you can have your day, but it's hard to beat them over a season on the TV. But, you know, that's the challenge that we're all set by. So the shootout is great in a way, because it's open draw. You know, you might play, a low rank player might play someone else who's ranked around them. You know, and they're both getting a shot on the main table, in the limelight, bit of experience, you know, and even though they're only 10-minute frames and stuff, winning out there in the limelight, you know, creates a lot of confidence and a lot of belief to say, actually, you know, I can do it. It's not that scary out there.
Yeah, that's good. And you want to take that forward now into the sort of the established ranking events. What are your sort of immediate ambitions, I guess, to sort of... firstly bed in on the tour and not be worrying about relegation again, but then just keep improving? Is that the plan?
Yeah, I believe you can't stand still in sport, so I set myself targets through the season, you know, and if I reach some of them targets, I reassess them going forward. So I'm always looking to improve my game. I've had quite a few TV matches now, to be fair, and I've played well in a few of them and struggled to get over the line in a few of them. So hopefully the shootout, I can use that experience to push me forward. And you know, that's where I want to be playing my snooker as often as possible. So you need to be comfortable out there, you need to want to play out there and want to win out there. But my targets now, to be honest, I've given myself a good solid base so far this year. I want to finish the season strong. I've still got four tournaments to play, so anything can happen. So I would, yeah, my ambitions are to get myself in the 64, the 48, you know, get myself well in. So this time next year, I'm looking up, I'm not looking at, am I keeping my tour card and stuff like that. You know, I believe I can get myself into the top 32, and I've believed that for a long time, but I just need to go out there and prove it.
The other thing about being at a tournament like the Welsh, as we are this week, is everyone's here together. It's not like there's been qualifying beforehand and people have fallen by the wayside. So you get to observe sort of the other players. Do you sort of learn, not necessarily from watching them on the table, but how they conduct themselves, some of the top players sort of around the tournaments?
Yeah, I do. Absolutely. And that's why I practice with a lot of them, because I'm always talking to them. So I practice a lot with Stuart Bingham as well, and I'm always picking his brains. And I'm always picking Anthony Hamilton's brains about stuff and what to do and, you know, what you should be doing. But to be fair, Ian McCulloch, you know, he gives me a lot of advice on that side of things. You know, he's been there, done it, worn the T-shirt. You know, it's easy to waste time and waste energy when you're at tournaments. But you're here to work, you know. We're all, you know, it's a good snooker family out there, all friends and stuff, but, you know.
You want to beat each other, though, that's the point.
Yeah.
When you've got the table.
Yeah. No one else is going to pay your bills or create a lifestyle for you. So you need to go and do that yourself. So when I come away, first and foremost, is my build up to the game, basically.
So you're glad that you persuaded your parents when you were 16 to follow a life in snooker?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I said to them, when I came home from the shootout, I said, you know, I've not made it or anything like that, but I said, look, now if we can see that decision all them years ago, that was very hard and looked like the wrong decision for quite a lot of years. Hopefully now it's actually turning around, you know, and I can do them proud, and one day, you know, I'm looking to win a tournament. So, you know, once I achieve that, you know, I'd love to go home with the trophy and just go, here you go, Mum and Dad, it was worth it in the end.
Brilliant. Okay, well, wish you luck, Martin. Good luck for the rest of the season, and thanks for being on the podcast.
Thanks very much, David.
Cheers. Thanks.